to the Media Matters podcast, presented by myself, Colette Sexton, news correspondent at the Sunday Business Post. In each episode, we talk to an expert in the media and marketing industry and pick their brain on the topics that matter. This month, my guest is Lane Geraghty, Chief Executive of Screen Producers Ireland, which represents independent producers of film, television and animation. Elaine took up the position at Spy in January 2017. It marked a return to the media industry for her, as she had previously spent 20 years working in radio. She left her last job in radio as Chief Executive of News Talk in 2009. She then went on to run youth mental health charity ReachOut.com before joining Spy. Welcome, Elaine.
Thanks, Colette.
So you took on the role at Spy last year. Why did you want it?
I have to admit, I missed the media side of my career, although, as you put it, 20 years in radio is a long time in radio, and it was great and it was brilliant, and then I went off and did something completely different. But I think, I mean, I've always had this philosophy that you work where you work at a particular point in time because it works for you and it works for the organisation. So when I left Reach Out, which was the youth mental health organisation, I'd pretty much done what I thought I could do there, and that job was done for me. So thinking, what will I do? Have a look around. This came up out of the blue. Wasn't looking for it in particular. In fact, I was looking around at a couple of other things and spotted this on a website of a recruiter. And I said, I'll have a look at that. And kind of said no, and then said yes.
And you kind of had a family background in production, though, so it didn't come out of the blue for you either.
No, it's not completely strange territory. Dad was in the film business before the film business really, really existed in the 60s and 70s. Well, it did, but it was all service. It was big American productions coming in, like Barry Lyndon and so on. And he was a production manager and he was a location manager in his time. So a lot of our childhood in Raheny was waiting for the phone to ring with a big American accent saying, we're coming in to make a production. You work again. And my mother would say, you eat again. And that's not an exaggeration. I mean, it just wasn't the thing that was happening. So oddly enough and ironically enough, Colette, at the end of that, I said, there's no way I'm getting into that business because it's just so unreliable. So I ended up in the really reliable world of independent radio. A not-for-profit charity.
Talk about a secure job.
Talk about a secure, yeah, but two of the brothers out of the three went into the business themselves. So probably in the DNA somewhere, meant to be.
And I mean, obviously the industry has changed so much since your dad was working in it. And we've got the likes of Netflix and Amazon these days. Now, where does production work in Ireland come from? Does it come from the RTEs and the TV3s, or is it Netflix and Amazon?
Well, it's an actual business. That's the first thing to say. So if you're, you know, it's a bespoke industry. So if you look back at even in the 80s, when it was utterly really reliable and incoming production and service to what we're doing now, like it really has changed. It's changed because people can work pretty much all year round. That's the first thing to say. And while the nature of the film side of the members that I represent, or we represent in TV drama, like it is freelance, it is project by project, but there are lots of them. And that would be the key difference. And you're absolutely right. Like, you make content, but where do you consume it? Where do you see it? How is it distributed? Lots of different options now. I mean, interestingly enough, the Irish Film Board recently changed their name, as you know, to Screen Ireland for a reason, because Screen is not just the cinema. You'll probably notice the narrative from RTE, for example, doesn't talk about a broadcaster any longer, because that's just too narrow. We're around media. So the options and the opportunities are greater. I mean, they bring challenges, but the shape of the industry, the audiovisual sector, is really, really different, particularly over the last 15 years.
Now, funding from RTE to the independent industry has been decimated really since the recession. What kind of impact has that had?
You're right, it's decimated by 50%, gone from just under 40 million in 2008, sorry, 80 million rather, in 2008, just to under 40 right now, and it's been static. And yet, the dependence on the independent sector is still there, and also the pressure on, you know, our members who produce the content and the programmes is such that while we're back and recovering economy-wise, I mean, our business is all about people and employing people. So it's the cost to hire, it's the cost to get business done, and yet we still need to deliver the programme. So yeah, it's really, really challenging. And like, a core policy of Screen Producers Ireland is to have a very well-funded public service broadcaster. Now, we don't always agree on everything, you know, with RTE, but what is great is we agree to disagree. But we definitely agree on having a better funded service so that independent producers can provide the content that Irish people love to consume and watch in their thousands.
Do you think that that funding will only come if something happens with the TV license, or is there another option out there?
Well, the first stop is the TV license, because if you talk about low-hanging fruit and what we should be getting, if we were talking about tax evasion for any other service, for example, it wouldn't be tolerated. And what bothers me and concerns me is the lack of urgency around that issue. Because if you collect what's due efficiently, then immediately you're putting into central coffers again in relation to what's available. You know, our view about increasing licence fee, we wouldn't be in favour of it right now, oddly enough, you might think. We think it should be capped at what it is, even though RTE have not had a rise for a number of years and it hasn't gone up with inflation. I think there's a job of work to be done, and, you know, RTE have a big change programme ahead in terms of cost cutting and restructure and so on. So keep the fee as it is for now, but collect what's due. I mean, that's one funnel of advertising. The other thing we've spoken about and you've written about would be around maybe changing the structure and having a media charge, because, you know, what is public service broadcasting? What does it mean? If you read any article about it nowadays and put out the proposition that maybe we need to collect it via the revenue commissioners, which we would actually support, or increase the fee, the narrative's the same. It's moan and it's a whine about how come certain RTE personalities are earning a certain amount of money, how it's a waste of money, how should we don't watch TV any longer. But, you know, I would propose that if you look at the schedule and you look at the things you love to watch, as well as the stuff that RTE makes, by the way, it's about room to improve. It's about can't cope, won't cope. It's about the new series, The Game, which starts, I think, tomorrow evening, all made by independent producers. So let's just take a step back and take a deep breath and say, let's appreciate what it is we like and what our public service actually is and support it.
That is an argument I have with people all the time when they're like, I never watch RTE, why should I pay the license? And I'm like, oh, well, do you not have the News Now app on your phone there? Did you not say that you loved watching Room to Improve, or, you know, you tuned into Dancing with the Stars? I think a PR exercise is needed there.
I think you're right, Colette. And part of my job and our job, particularly over the last 12 months, has been that communication piece. So whether we walk into a minister's office or whether we talk to your good self or anybody else in media, it's about framing who we are, who independent producers are, what we do, and where we fit in that conversation around public service broadcasting, because there can just be this narrow approach, and that's fine. We've got work to do on it, and we're trying to do it better than we have been in understanding that we make the programmes that thousands like to watch and want to watch.
So RTE has said that if the TV licence issue is sorted and they do get more money from it, that they will put that money into the independent production sector. Do you believe them?
They've committed to that. It's in writing. We'll hold them to account for that. But in fairness to them, you know, that commitment has been made, and we've asked for that commitment. And I think that if you look at the job that they're trying to do and any of the recent releases, and when Dee Forbes speaks in, you know, whether it's the PAC or wherever, there is that, you know, open, clear commitment to the independent sector. And I would say quite rightly so, because there is a dependence on us. There's not just that we depend on the public service broadcaster itself. We're producing that content. So, yeah, I mean, it's ongoing. We're, you know, we have ongoing engagement with RTE and all the stakeholders that we work with.
Now, obviously, you also represent the animation sector, and there was talk about how much RTE has cut their kids' programming in recent years. Are you concerned about the amount of money that they're investing in Indigenous children's programming?
Yeah, it's tiny in terms of as a percentage of the overall budget. And part of our conversations with RTE, well, they're around a number of things, but that in particular, in fact, only this week I was speaking to them. Now, look, we accept there's a restructure. There's a brand new commissioning structure being put in place. It's almost there. They have most of their people appointed. Young people's programming person is to be appointed shortly. So what we're doing with RTE and what they've agreed to do with us is to meet us again. We met as industry with them earlier this year, April, I think it was. We're going to regroup in September to understand what it is that they're going to do. Because you're right, and if you think about animation, it's very narrow. There's very little money spent on it. And it's also for the really young part of that age group. Whereas we would say there's a bigger audience there from 8, 9, 10 upwards into teens that we are well placed to serve. So I'm hoping they're going to have something positive to say to us when they talk to us about what their strategy is there.
And surely there's an argument there that if you don't grow up watching RTÉ, then you're not going to switch it on automatically when you're an adult either. You know, the likes of my generation would have grown up with The Den and were used to switching on RTÉ 1 and 2.
Well, how do you build loyalty, Colette? It's back to, you know, media has utterly changed. You'll know that in the print media and so on. So how do you hold on to your audience?
Here we are doing a podcast for a print newspaper.
Who'd have thunk it? You know, who would have thought it? But, you know, you're right. And I think that you need to be, if you want to future-proof what you're doing and you want to keep an audience with you and recognise that you've got competition coming from, you know, from every angle. So how do you diversify? What are you going to do if you're RTÉ digital? How do you keep your audience, keep them engaged, keep them loyal? And look, I've no doubt they're thinking about this. We'd like to help them think about that.
So what would you like them to come back with in September?
We'd like a very clear picture of what their intentions are with regard to their strategy for each genre or programme. So you've talked about young people, which is part animation and part other. Factual and documentary, what their commitment is there. Drama is spoken about a lot, and I know RTÉ are seeking extra investment in order to commit to that beyond Fair City. So what does that look like? What are they doing about film? You know, what's the strategy in relation to feature film? They're one of the few public
service
broadcasts.
Doesn't seem to be one.
Yeah, it's true. Look, we want a little bit of everything, but the point is, what RTÉ do well is their news and current affairs and some other things, obviously, as well. What we do is the rest. But we need ring-fenced budget. We need, you know, we need to know what that looks like, probably from 2019 onwards, because we're nearly at the end of 2018. If you look at the number of repeats that we're all looking at right now during the summer, I would hope that those holes are filled with original programming by the time that we get to 2019.
Is there a problem with the commitment when it comes to things like drama series, in terms of you get the first one done, but you've no idea when the second one or if it's going to come?
It's a challenge, really. And that's influenced by a number of facts. And that's how all of these things are funded, because RTÉ have spoken openly about the value of co-production and how that has to work. And we completely appreciate that. But it's being able to fund all these projects, and often they're a mix of funding. So it could be RTÉ, Sound and Vision, maybe some Section 481 in there, etc., etc. And for all that to work, everything has to be aligned. Like, everything has to work timely.
Now, you mentioned there the government. So they recently launched a 200 million audiovisual plan. What do you think of the plan?
Well, the 200 you're talking about relates specifically to increasing funding for Screen Ireland, formerly the Irish, you know, the Irish Film Board, which is restoring their annual income to, you know, back to 2008 levels, which we're completely supportive of and which we lobbied for. How that pans out, I mean, it's committed, it's allocated, it's ring-fenced. We're not sure that additional money every year will work out at 20 million per year. We don't know what that looks like. But everything that they're saying they wish to do with that additional funding, we would be supportive of. I mean, includes supporting regional production. It includes upping training. There is a drama budget in there. I'm not sure how much or what it's going to be for. We would absolutely be supportive of it. I mean, we'll wait and see how it pans out, when, what the time schedule is for all of these things. But to give the National Screen Agency funding that it needs is, of course, welcome.
Now, the Irish Film Board, in its previous name, was criticised for giving most of its money to kind of the large production companies and not nurturing the smaller ones. Do you think that is a fair criticism?
You know, it's one you should aim at them, really. But I mean, I think if you look at the kinds of funds that they have, they're not all for the bigger productions. I mean, they're simply not. And they've been quite innovative in terms of how they're managing their funding. Like, they're managing productions. I think the lowest budget fund is about 470,000, which, you know, to us mere mortals might seem like an awful lot of money, but actually it's quite low in terms of production values. So no, it couldn't be aimed at them, that all of it is at the bigger boys, let's say. There's something in there for new and smaller productions as well.
So the economic assessment of Ireland's kind of audiovisual industry said that the Irish film, TV and animation sector could, in a period of 5 years, double employment to over 24,000 full-time equivalents, a gross value of nearly 1.4 billion euro. Is that aiming high enough? Is it too low? Does it make sense? Is it achievable?
It's achievable if all the elements for growth and development are in place. And one really simple thing would be around infrastructure. If you think about studio space and what we have right now, we've Ashford, Ardmore, most recently Troy, possibly something around Poolbeg or whatever. But at the very least, you've got to have the space, if you think about it. Mm. If we're full and we pretty much at capacity right now, how do we build and develop upon that space? That's the first thing. The second thing is, and training is really, really key in all of this, that we have the skills that are available, not just for incoming, but for Indigenous production as well. So what shape are we in skills-wise? I mean, we're in pretty good shape, I would suggest, judging by the kind of production that comes here and what we can, you know, what we can service. There's no question about that. But I think for us to grow and mature, we've some work to do on the training side of things. And there's some fantastic things happening. Troy is a case in point. They do some great things out of Vikings and into the Badlands as well. Red Rock was an excellent example, really, in terms of training. More of that's required. I think we need to capture what we're doing already. We have to look at upskill a broader base so that we can actually service productions, Indigenous and incoming, if we're able to reach those job numbers.
Now, the nature of production means that it is a project by project basis, and you mentioned your dad there and wondering if you're going to eat that month. But now the work can be really exciting and varied, but obviously it's a bit unstable as well, and it can be difficult for people to, with that kind of work, to get mortgages, to plan for their future in terms of pensions and that kind of thing. What can be done about that, and what is SPY doing about that?
Well, the first thing to say is that if you ask most people who work in our industry, and I'm just talking about, and most of, I mean, if we talk about TV, talk about film, that applies. But if I just took film and maybe TV drama for a second and asked those people that are in, you know, work in the heart of it, regardless of producers, they actually like the project by project nature of it. They recognise the freelance nature of it. And that's not just me saying it, by the way. If you look at the guilds, the Film Workers Guild submission to the Oireachtas Committee proceedings, the Culture Committee earlier this year in January and February, that really rings through. That yes, you want stability, but what we want to do, Colette, is create as many productions as possible so that if you're working in the industry, you get to choose what you want to do. So it means different productions, but consistent work. So the job of the producer is to make sure we can make those things happen, that we provide the opportunities for production. And for those of, you know, those of us working in the industry, they actually like it. Now, that being said, sure, you want to get a mortgage, and pensions are important, and it's something that's on our agenda in relation to negotiating the current shooting crew agreement, which does what it says on the tin. It concerns those people that are involved in film at the shooting stage of it. And, you know, pensions on the table for discussion, and it's not something that would have happened, but it has to happen. We're a mature industry now, believe it or not. We're not any different to other at that level. So we have to provide that support and that element of security. But with regard to tenure and the nature of work, pretty much people who work in it want to work that way so that they have those choices.
So it is kind of a project by project, and keeping it exciting and making
sure.
Yeah,
I mean, it's, again, not for the faint-hearted, but for a particular kind of person. You know, there's no question about it. You're cut out to do that job. But a lot of people train on the job. You come in, you learn at a certain level, you work out what you want to do, you work your way up through or whatever. I mean, many producers started doing very, very different things, for example. But it is, again, probably back to that DNA and the nature of the industry that this is what I want to work. But that shouldn't mean that you can't, you know, start a family, have a home, plan. So what are the things that we can do around that? Well, the things we can do are bring in as many productions as possible, or start as many, or create the opportunities. But look at things like pension, look at things like upskilling, so that you have the opportunity to actually work your way through, and there's a career path. And they're the two kind of constants that we can look to.
Now, there has been reports of unrest in the industry recently, and there's been a few strikes that have taken place. Why have these taken place, and what is SPY doing about them?
Well, the first thing is there haven't been any strikes. There's been some illegal action, all right. I mean, for the most part, like any other territory, industrial relations exists, but actually works quite well. And, you know, I would suggest to you that we live in a different era now where we've got really great employment legislation that's in place, and the role of trade unions, while you know, there and they're necessary, they're different. I mean, I used to be a shop steward in the ITGWU before you were born, which is now SIP2, and back in the days of working in the Sunday Tribune, it was a whole different ball game in terms of negotiating house agreements and so on. So the good news is We have good employment legislation. We've also got pretty good agreements in place, and they cover things like, as I said, shooting crew. So that's production managers, hair and makeup, everybody that works in that element. There is engagement, which was the TWU, which is the electrical union now called Connect. And there is a construction agreement in place that's worked. And there are some, you know, there are some elements of industrial relations that are not great. There are some small associations that have set up and organised and represent some, you know, some small groups, very small, maybe under 5% of the industry. And that's been a little bit problematic, but it hasn't stopped any production. There's been some illegal downings of tools, so to speak, that have been a little bit unsavoury, but nothing that's actually stopped production. So what we're trying to do now is make sure that we've got like great agreements in place that work for everybody, by the way. You know, the solution, we work in a fast-paced world, okay? Once the production starts, the train's out of the station, it's not coming back in. You can't afford a minute, an hour, a day at all. None of us can. So it's important that we create, you know, good environments, dignity in the workplace, good agreements, proper processes in terms of grievance procedure should anything occur. And you do that by negotiating with Congress group of unions, because they have the structure and in place and the framework to which we need to work. So a little bit to do, but, you know, I'm not overly concerned about it.
Is bogus self-employment a problem in the industry?
Self-employment, it's interesting. I've there's a lot talked about bogus self-employment, not just in our industry right now, and you'll know there's new legislation coming.
A lot of legislation, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the reality is that's choice of an individual if they want to go down the route of being self-employed or otherwise. From our point of view, there's no push from us to be categorised in one way or the other, as long as you satisfy those criteria that need to be satisfied, particularly for revenue, if you're self-employed. And, you know, how you're engaged, and that we satisfy the correct agreement. Otherwise, you're an employee and you're treated a separate way. But there's certainly no push to be self-employed. In fact, I think some people may think it's better, you know, but when you start to look at it and then try to manage your own tax affairs and, you know,
it's no fun.
It ain't any fun at all. And actually, some people start off as, you know, Schedule D, and then say, you know, not for me, I prefer to be treated as an employee, and that's the way it works out. It's really an individual case. But from our perspective, as employers, it's not really an issue one way or the other. So bogus self-employment is not something that's in our narrative at all. All we say is that if you present as a Schedule D or somebody self-employed, we expect that you fit the criteria and we have to adhere to them too. I mean, we're subject to employment law like everybody else is. So I'm not seeing it in our industry, to be frank with you.
Now, we've spoken about the TV licence and about the what changes need to happen there and the budget coming up this year and what you're looking for there. Is there anything else that you're lobbying government on?
So TV licence would be key, and a restructure of that. We put our points to the Future of Public Service Broadcasting, the Oireachtas Committee report, and all of our recommendations were reflected in their recommendations. So if I just say budget aside for a second, I know Minister Nocton has got a working group together, and I kind of shudder when I hear working group sometimes, because actually all the evidence is there. The Oireachtas Committee worked long and hard at that. Please just review that. You know, it's there. Budget-wise, though, I mean, we need 481 in the bag in terms of a commitment beyond 2020, and we need to announce that would be the biggest thing for us. Obviously, a restructure of the licence fee. The independent sector contributes so much. Our statutory funding via public service broadcasting has literally been halved, and the pressure is only mounting on us, and that has to be restored. I would say take public service broadcasters seriously. You'll have noted that TG Cahir got an extra million announced this week, and they've made, you know, very broad commitments to the independent sector based on that increased funding. And we'll be looking to ensure that they keep those commitments.
Now, would you like to see a minister for media?
Yes. I mean, I and we have always called for this. You know, we fall between a number of departments, you know, stools, for example. And within each department, you get, you know, varying levels of commitment.
But so there's the Department of Culture, the Department of Communications,
and remember,
sometimes
job,
finance.
Yeah, definitely finance in the middle of it, but jobs and enterprise too. And you know what? Just one good thing is that the Allsburg report, you know, the government's response is really very welcome. And one of the action points is to convene a steering, well, actually to keep the steering group, most of it that was in place, overseeing that report, but in place for the implementation, because that's really the important bit. And, you know, pleasingly, the Department of Finance and Jobs and Enterprise are now part of that steering group, which I think speaks to the importance of all of those functions in relation to supporting the creative industries. That's welcome. What I would say about that is, though, there has to be an engagement with industry rather than
guessing, you know, what you guys are up to.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So that's really important. But if you had a champion, if you had a minister that was at cabinet, that was actually the champion for the creative sector, for the AV industry, however we want to frame it, that would be really huge for us. Because when your department portfolio goes from culture, the Gaeltacht, you know, environment, or I mean, we're just an element in that. Naturally, we only get a ratio of time dedicated to that. So I understand that. But the UK do it. I think we should do it.
And considering how much media has changed in recent years, it probably does make sense that the government looks at it a bit more closely.
Yeah, it's changing really rapidly. And I just think my own experience of, if you talk about things like public service broadcasting and the licence fee, like, not everybody gets it. You need somebody to fully understand what we're dealing with, not elements of it. And somebody, as I said, that would be a champion for it, that would give it the, would elevate it to something that's considered at policy level at all times.
And we've been talking about the TV licence fee for so long that, I mean, it's been gone through three Minister for Communications now, just in terms of whether there should be a broadcasting charge or not. That's Pat Rabbit, Alex White and Dennis Nocton now. And it just seems that every time we get a new minister, it goes back to square one again.
Yeah, it does. And, you know, you can just look the fear in their eyes when you start to talk about licence fee. But actually, I don't think that's good enough. I think that it's a really important issue that needs to be taken seriously and given urgency. You're right, media is changing utterly. But, you know, my piece in this is about the independent production sector and our role in public service broadcasting. And that's the position that I will talk to all the time. You're talking about employers. People are involved in enterprise, employ people across the country, produce the content that actually politicians and those same ministers watch regularly. This is bigger than X gets paid a certain amount of money in RTE and that's not good enough. Or what about the orchestras or moaning about the late, late? That's not the conversation. It's a much more serious and broader conversation that deserves to be taken seriously.
And speaking about moaning about the late, late, I know that Ryan Tuberty says that he gets people all the time coming up to him, we'll say, of a Monday after the show on a Friday night, and they'll be like, and I hated this section, and I hated this piece, and I hated that guest you had on. And he's like, but if you watched all those things, that means you watched the whole show.
It's a national pastime, isn't it?
It really
talk
is.
About the things that we didn't think we watched and everything we now need to say about them, but that's okay. I mean, you've got to be a bit pragmatic about it, and that's fine as well. I wouldn't be smug. I wouldn't have any expectation. You know, if we have a job to do about communicating what we do, then we just need to get better at doing it.
So when is an Irish animation company going to create and own the rights to a Peppa Pig or a Doc McStuffins or whatever else?
Oh,
is coming along.
I really hope very soon. I really do, because we've amazing animators, and you know, it really is the golden child when you think about media. You cannot consume a piece of media about animation except it being a good story, which is fabulous. But then, you know, you've got to look underneath the story and say, well, you know, where's the pure Irish animation companies themselves? We're very much a service industry and we're brilliant at it. Like what we talk about it in Screen Producers Ireland in terms of our own interest in animation is, how do we make sure that, you know, service companies are leave a footprint here, and that we can take all of those skills and create our own programming out of it. I mean, you can't knock it. It is fantastic business. And look at all the Oscar nominations and the accolades. I mean, Kilkenny is
buzzing, yeah.
It absolutely is where it's at. But
Talk about being employed all across the country. Kilkenny is a serious example of that.
No, it really is. And companies like Paper Owl, who are based up in Belfast and member of ours, are doing amazing things with Pablo, for example. Mm. So there are really great things happening. I think what we'd like to see as well is a connection between what students are training for and what they're coming out into industry to do. And one thing, you know, part of our policy is to look at that and say, what are the training needs? Are they fit for purpose right now in terms of what the, you know, what the academic curriculum is? We're working with Screen Training Ireland on that as well. In fact, you know, Screen Training Ireland have a huge responsibility in pretty much everything. Like, there's quite a lot on them in terms of what they have to deliver.
Yeah, they touch nearly everything.
They pretty much do, but I think it's our job to assist with that and to see what that looks like. And Gareth Lee took up his position there recently and has come from academia as well. So he's come from that training background. So, yeah, hopefully really good things will be done there.
If I have a brilliant idea for a TV show or an excellent script, what do I do?
Come and talk to me and I'll point you in the right direction.
Excellent. Elaine, I think we'll leave it there. That's all for this installment of the Media Matters podcast. Thanks so much to Elaine Geraghty of Screen Producers Ireland for taking the time to chat to me. And thanks to you all for tuning in. If you liked what you heard, please share Media Matters on your social media channels, rate us on iTunes and subscribe. If you have feedback or any suggestions for future interviewees, tweet me on Colette_Sexton. Until next time.